getting better.
Okay, what we have is board time December 3rd, Wednesday at 3:43. Commissioners, first item is approval of minutes for the 12th and 19th of November.
Okay, I move that we approve the minutes for both dates.
I won't second because I'm going to abstain.
What if I didn't second? I'll second.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
And I indicate I'm abstaining because I wasn't here for those meetings.
Of course, sure. Okay, I believe last week at our consent hearing, our finance director, Mark Gassaway, brought to the board a list of uncollectible accounts, and the board elected to pull that and asked Mr. Gassaway to come have a discussion with the board regarding that policy and to determine whether the board would like to continue the current policy or develop another. So, Mark?
What we currently do on uncollectible accounts, we have an internal process and an external process that all of these go through. We have an internal six-month process that we go through before they're actually sent out to collections. The internal process consists of reminders, sending letters, those kind of things. And then we actually send them out. So everything that you see on this list or that was on the list at consent has already been through both our internal and the external process. In the past, because of the nature of some of these, our direction has been not to do anything additional. In other words, the suggestion of placing liens or other types of pursuit, we've been not asked to do. So I'm bringing it back to you so you know what process they've been through and whether you would like us to change how we pursue these uncollectible accounts or what we've deemed uncollectible. And some of them are historical. Some of these are the same people year after year after year, particularly with like fire inspections that have never paid. So we've been instructed that it's not good policy not to have a fire inspection just because they haven't paid, and we're not going to pursue those kind of things. So new individuals here, so.
Mm-hmm. Do we send a message that anybody that doesn't want to pay for the fire inspection, they don't have to?
No. Well, I don't know.
Well, that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, and again, that's certainly up to you. I think that in previous discussions we've had, when we've had particularly this issue, it has never been directed for us to do additional work. Does that
fire inspections is one of the categories. Are there others?
There's particularly three main categories, and the majority of these, of the 22,000, 15,000 is from damage incurred in an accident to public property.
Guardrails,
light posts, those kind
stop
of things.
Stop signs.
Stop signs that we have to repair. Then we send them a bill, but they have not reimbursed or paid the county for.
That's so billed to an insurance company or billed to the individual?
Billed to the individual. I'm sure if it's through an insurance company, then the insurance company would pay for it. But a lot of times they're uninsured drivers.
Yeah.
So usually if you're uninsured and you create damage, you could send that lien or recognition or notification to the Department of License, and they have the ability to not renew their driver's license if they don't take care of it.
But the folks that don't insure their vehicles frequently are the folks that drive whether they have a license or not.
Right. Maybe I ask the question a little bit different.
Okay.
Regardless of what the policy has been or should be, what would you advise if we had no policy at all? What would you do in these cases?
A lot of these cases are to the point where the additional work that would be required to collect anything is going to cost as much or more than the actual collection itself. By the time we get down to this small of a list, we have really been through quite a process already, and the potential of collecting from these individuals is pretty low. So again, there's a cost reward benefit when you get to this point in the process. I don't know that the staff time or the legal time or the treasurer's time to place liens is going to really allow us to recover more than what we'd have to put into it.
When we have code enforcement go out and the people are not in compliance and they're given a time date in which to do it with the threat of so much a day penalty, would we do the same thing in that case? We make an effort and we can't do it, we write it off?
Well, we have the, I think the, oh, for, you mean for code enforcement?
Yeah.
No, for uncollectible accounts. Well, you, could you assess doubled. A daily fee? I know they're assessed interest at the judgment rate, right? 12%?
Well, you have to get a judgment first. Look, yeah. Let me see
these
if I can help.
They've not gone to court.
Right. So. Let me see if I can answer. First of all, there's a state law that specifically allows you to assess liens and to place them in the same category as tax liens. So they go to the top of the list. Code enforcement penalties have a unique position because of their ability to stay within the chain of title so that when property is sold, you invariably get paid because they won't be able to sell the property without clearing title. So title companies are, in some cases, your best friend. The other thing that typically occurs is there's either a death in the family, and when you have often these cases involve parents who have their kids come home, and the kids bring junk, and the parents, you know, are old enough that they can't clean it up. When the property changes hands, we wind up with new people who are interested in cleaning it up, so we work with them. That's completely different than this scenario. Now, that's not to say that our office can't be involved. What my sense would be that if there's a certain amount of money involved and the board wanted us to pursue on either selectively, for example, some second offenders or something else, however we set this policy, you could probably take some of these to small claims and seek small claims actions, but there's still a cost. I mean, Mark's point is still well taken. You're going to have people that you're going to be spending X amount of dollars per hour to file these, and if you get a judgment and they don't pay them, the judgment's not worth any more than the person you sue. I mean, that's a standard line you'll hear from any attorney. But it is an available option for the board, depending on how you choose to move forward and if you want to revisit this policy.
So with that being said, and when you shared, is there a dollar amount that we choose? So if it's under a certain dollar amount, we could write it off. If it's over a certain amount,
yeah,
we would pursue?
Right, and we already have the list that goes to the commissioners is everything over $50. If it's a smaller than $50 amount, then we have the ability to write those off administratively. So you won't see these. These are those amounts that are over that $50. But again, as you look at the list, they're not big dollars. They're $100, $150, except when you get to the property, the damaged property, where there are, you know, a few that are $1,000 or a couple thousand. Of the $22,000, $15,000 is the damaged property. The rest, you have a small amount in the fire inspections, about $3,000, and then you have $4,000 that actually are rents that were being paid by our parks hosts that they
caretakers
that they did not pay their rent, and then they've subsequently left or were evicted in some cases, that is back rent, which if they didn't pay it while they were living there and haven't paid it since they've been through collections, the likelihood of them paying it now, even if you were to get a small claims judgment, probably isn't that high.
Okay. Of those two categories, Dan, you got the fire inspections and you got the rent. It sounds like both of those, you basically, I think you're saying, don't try to collect those. It's not
so
worth it.
It's so small that the effort and work involved would be difficult.
So the last category?
Are the damaged to county property through vehicle accidents.
What do you recommend there? Same story?
Obviously, if they had insurance, if they were insured, and we were able to collect, we've collected. These are those that don't fit that category, that finding them may, just finding them may be an issue.
Okay.
And as Mark mentioned, the fact that we could go to the vehicle license agency and attach this, they may not even be licensed drivers.
So,
yeah, we have the driving while suspended classes up here, and they're always chock full.
Yeah. We've culled through everything that is, I don't want to use the word easily, but we can collect. And once you go through an outside collecting agency, they're very aggressive. Yeah. I mean, they go through a formal process. And a lot of times, you know, you just, you're finding some of these people.
So tell me if this is a fair summary of what I think you're saying. We have a policy. It's working very well. You pursued all reasonable diligence at this point, to the point where you, when it gets to this point, you're recommending we just let it go.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay, I'm good with that.
What period of time is this amount for? Is this a year?
This is 1 year. This is 1 year last, not 2014, 2013.
And what is the history prior to that in general in lump sum? Does this follow a similar pattern annually of reaching these kind of numbers when we've exhausted all possibilities?
This is probably a typical
pretty
year.
Typical.
Because if you look at, I mean, we're billing, you know, millions of dollars.
Sure.
In these services.
So you indicated repeat offenders. By repeat, do you mean each year someone defaults in the same category for roughly the same amount, for example, fire inspection?
And that's the best example. You'll have the same people year after year after year not pay for their fire inspections.
Isn't that a failed inspection if they don't pay for it?
Not failed. The inspection is completed, and they get a bill. They just don't pay it.
There's a fee that they don't pay the fee.
Right.
Yeah, and we have an interest in public safety, and to cut them off of having fire inspections could create unsafe conditions.
Well,
so whether they pay or not, we have to continue doing those inspections.
Right.
So
and that goes back to why we haven't pursued these.
So it sounds like what they're stating is that I don't think I should pay for this, and so that, you know, why is the county charging me? They should do this. I already pay taxes. That sounds like what the statement that they're making.
And we'll go back and inspect again. Their business. And they won't pay us again.
Because under law, or for the public benefit, the public good, we have to. I mean, if they're a public place, a lot of these are, you know, restaurants and.
Okay. Well, there's public safety involved, or even if it's a plant that handles chemicals or something else, we'd still want it inspected every year.
I'm good at leaving it like it is. I mean, to accept your recommendation.
But if you don't collect, then that burden
for
that department falls on the rest of the taxpayers.
Absolutely.
And it seemed like when you pursued for only 1 year, it's a pretty short time. I can remember my daughter defaulting in her car payment, and they repossessed the car. Then they resold it. And for the deficit, I think it was 5 or 7 years later, they got their money. And they're talking the same money that you're talking, a couple thousand dollars.
I do think that maybe we should try to think, how much are those amounts typically?
These range between, the largest is maybe $2,000, maybe down to $100. I mean, they're not individually large amounts.
Yeah. But it does not seem right that the need for a fire inspection and then the cost of doing it is not offset by fees for them the same as it is for everybody. So I think if, you know, we have a creative way to get after that a little bit.
And probably the best way may be to document those in that particular category who have been
chronic
and maybe give you a list, because I think, you know, there may be something that could be done with the individual owners.
Yeah.
However, again, as Commissioner Melky said, those that refuse to pay over a period of time because, you know, they don't want to, I don't know how to convince them.
It isn't fair. But your point is well taken. How much time can we spend to do that? But in that category where we have repeats, it might be a good idea to think about. Even if we get a list, we're not going to forgive any of that. So it doesn't seem right that the same people are sort of the chronic deadbeats on a fee that is to everybody's benefit.
Correct.
I do have a question on that. If we count it as a bad debt, does that mean that we close the door of us ever going back and...
No.
Okay, so that door is still open. When they, let's say you've got XYZ company in there, each time that a bad debt happens for that company, is that bill, invoice, unpaid, is that bad debt still attached to that so that you look back at any time and see the history?
I think we go back and look historically what, you know, we've billed. I'm kind of narrowing this down to fire permits now. Mm-hmm. We could go back and look over a period of time of what's been billed and what's been collected on an individual account.
Well, yeah. And I would also say, Commissioners, that if this appears at the consent hearing, it will be archived as a legislative action.
Well, I'm just thinking that suppose that 3 years from now, this, you know, the same company over and over and over exceeds some $2,500 threshold or something. At that point, you can say, okay, you just exceeded your threshold, and so all of the records are there that says, and this year, and this year, and this year, here's your list of bad debts, we're going to go after you. We have that freedom to do so.
Sure, absolutely.
Because you have the accounting that stays attached to the
absolutely.
Account.
And just because these are written off on our books, they're still have been placed with the collection agency.
Oh, okay.
And they still have the ability to go and pursue those.
Okay, then that's
so
good.
They're not necessarily the end of the road.
We're just not.
No, we're changing our balance sheet.
Yes.
Okay.
To remove these as receivables.
Yes.
Oh, that's
see,
good.
The frequency of one name here five times.
Yeah.
Totaling, you know, 600, 500.
That's
the 700.
That's a caretaker.
That's a caretaker.
Right, but there ought to be some perfect
example
frequency.
Small claims court right there.
Well, these other like fire inspections would show up
in previous
years.
Once. Yes, right. Yeah. That too.
Okay, so we're not forgiving the debt. We're just taking it out of our accounts receivable.
We're taking it off of the county's books. Again, it'll still be with the collection agency.
Great. Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, the state auditor would look at this and they would go, wow, look at these receivables that you're carrying. Are they really collectible or aren't they?
Yeah.
And when they go to a collection agency, does that agency have all the other bills from that same defaulting?
If we sent them.
Okay.
Everything that we've sent them.
All right. Previous years, I mean. Okay. Great. Okay.
We recognize those as fees, unpaid fees. Now's a good time to talk about stormwater fees.
Well, before we move on, this needs to come back to consent.
I'm not the right guy to talk about that.
Hey, that's not on our agenda.
So we'll just reschedule this for consent.
Do you want me to just put this back on consent for the
16th? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it should have been more done, but I'm outvoted.
Could they complete the action now by vote here?
The next thing for us to do would be to give them to the prosecuting attorney court. So.
Well, what you could do is, I think as Mark said, this doesn't change and impair your ability in the future to go after these. If we have a track record on some of these people, we can pursue a small claims action. The difference between unpaid inspection fees is if you have an ongoing enterprise, a business, your ability, once you get in a judgment, to garnish accounts becomes more of a real opportunity than it might be for others. So there's at least some things to talk about that are different from this than it is a tenant who has moved back to Montana or something.
So I would say as a watcher of the accounts, look for opportunities for you to be able to look at an aggregate over previous years and to go after them at your own discretion. I would think you have that authority right now, right?
Well, I'm understanding that they've already done that.
Well, they've gone to the small or they've gone to the collection agency.
Haven't gone to the department. I mean, if someone's out there without insurance and without driver's license, or maybe they don't have insurance and they are driving, they're going to pop up sooner or later, and it'd be nice to go up there and say, you can't get a driver's license.
Well, I think Mark's right. You'll find that, both Marks, that you're going to find that our experience in the prosecutor's office is we have hundreds of people who are driving without insurance, mm-hmm. without driver's licenses, who are driving while suspended and maybe habitually suspended for 5 years because they've lost their ability to get a license, and they continue to drive because they needed a car for work. And some of them are innocent, some of them are not real, some of them have other issues, and some of them are very willful and, you know, are a problem. But that whole category is a large category of people who are at risk and endanger other people who are on the road.
I do have a question. You were asking it, and it is, does this need to come back to the consent, or can we actually approve the statute?
They're in open public meeting. If it's on your agenda,
I prefer that we dispense with it.
Yeah, take care of it. Vote on it.
Okay.
Now?
Sure.
Okay.
So the
motion would be?
Approve writing off $22,811.32.
Okay. I move that we approve the... take the requested action and approve writing off $22,811.33 from the auditor's accounts receivable for bad debts.
Second.
Okay, moving second. Any further discussion? I'm not going to support it. I'll let you know that. I think that deadbeats are deadbeats because you let them be deadbeats, and you don't make the rules lesser for the people who are not in compliance. And I guess you call it tough love.
Before we vote, I also want to comment. There are really two independent things here, not connected. One is the squaring away of our books that says these are removed from our accounts receivable. The other independent one is your discretion that allows you to take whatever actions you deem necessary to go after these accounts, especially for habitual ones. And you don't need, we're not yielding up any of that authority at this point. You still can pursue that at your discretion.
Correct.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay.
Okay.
Okay. I think Rebecca has the original. Could you have her pull it? I'm signature. All
right.
Board chair.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, mm-hmm. Mark. Okay. 1.3, we turn the floor over to Commissioner Medora to discuss the BOCC fee waiver audit response.
Oh, yes. I guess Tina gave each commissioner a copy of this report.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is something that I welcome feedback from my fellow two commissioners here. It's something that I purposely titled it Clark County Commissioner without an S, not plural. Job Creation Fee Waiver Program Evidence-Based Findings, which is a response to the audit by Greg Coombsy's staff on the fee waiver program, and the intent there is to simply provide the evidence the evidence-based conclusion as we see it, as I see it at this point, and then paraphrase what the auditor's conclusion was for the same data. And because I don't know if you have if you've already had opportunity to review it, and if you're like, yeah, that's you accept it like it is, you're welcome to sign on with me on this. If you want to be able to somehow edit it and make it, amend it, make it your own or enhance or whatever you want to do, take ownership, I welcome that as well. You can bring it back at some time so it can be a collaboration.
And I did get a copy. Mm-hmm. I don't have it with me.
Yes.
And I began to keep.
Sure.
Okay. And I will review it. I will say this, that having some financial background, as the county auditor presented their findings, there were multiple times where I looked at the chart that they're showing in the PowerPoint that brought them to the conclusions that they were stating, a stated conclusion. And my experience looking at that same chart, I did not see how that conclusion could be logically concluded from many of the exhibits that I saw. So I was very confused by it. So I'll take a look at this. They didn't hand out copies of the PowerPoint.
No, but it's on the grid.
It's available online.
Is it available online?
Yeah, in multiple places. I'll send you.
Thank you. And I think if they were talking to the audience and showing a PowerPoint, it would have been helpful to have it in front of us so we could make notes. Mm-hmm. I tried to make notes, but not having those exhibits on the same page, my notes don't make that much sense. But so I honestly didn't feel that they made an extremely strong case that there was no benefit at all and it should be ceased or terminated. And I don't know, did they even ever say that?
No.
That there's no value to it and it should be terminated?
Yes. They multiple times that it was ineffective and should be discontinued.
I didn't think that they had the authority to tell you the audit and they would give you the results of the audit, that it saved money, it didn't save money, but I don't think they do recommendation as to cease and desist.
I think it's hard to evaluate it because I think there are so many factors that are integrated and interrelated and peripheral benefits. And I thought it was difficult for them to reach the conclusion in the way they did.
Yeah, they draw a number of conclusions. Fee waiver program is not cost effective. Clark County fee waiver programs appear to have had minimal impact on business construction.
Well, appear to have. I know what that means in audit language. We can't prove it did or it didn't. So that's not a way that you can't draw a conclusion from.
Good to have your experience on the board, I'll tell you. A majority of fee waivers awarded under the current program went to industries that would have grown without them.
Assumed.
Majority of projects receiving waivers are also unlikely to reduce the number of residents commuting to Oregon. Funding for the program may not be sustainable and may impact future county infrastructure projects. Yeah. So those are the next.
The last paragraph also makes a recommendation to either discontinue or revamp the program.
It says if continued, substantial changes are necessary.
Yeah. Does it itemize the changes?
They do it by inference. The program does not follow best practices. They think we ought to follow best practices. Short-term outcome, increased construction.
Do they specify what the best practices are that were not followed? I didn't see them
Not clearly, no.
Okay. So what I will do is read their report again and read this, make some notes.
Great, okay.
And forward them for discussion.
I would like to make a couple points. One is that this is not exhaustive. I didn't go through every point. I went through the idea is to bring the relative metrics forward, which have they been added, each of them, to the grid?
The what?
For instance, the
your chart?
TIF trend chart, the
yes.
road trend chart,
yes.
the related fund balance. So it is not exhaustive. So there's opportunity to go through a number of other points that the assertions that are made by the auditor and say, well, here's another area I want to be able to bring a contrasting view forward. And also, for instance, there's some areas where it's just, for instance, there are false claims in there. Here's one maybe that's an overstatement. There is a claim in there that one quarter where there was a $350,000 shortfall, so therefore the whole program is not sustainable. In reality, that was the one-time charge, the cost,
yes,
to rebuild the permit center, so that's an exception. So it would seem to be an illogical conclusion.
And expense not related.
It's a one-time. You don't make long-term projections out of one-time expenses.
Another point would be the PowerPoint in the verbal account that went along with that made assertions that kind of enhanced and amplified what was actually written in the audit. For instance, there was a reference to the 2010 program, which was a partial fee waiver for 15 or more employees and for partial geographic areas. And that was a survey that was given in 2011 to the applicants at the counter so that is a different program, asking the wrong people. And yet that was a solid headline in the PowerPoint that says, see, this is only a small fraction of this program makes any sense at all.
So the sample that they used to ask the questions to were people who had applied or had been interested in applying a previous program.
It was for a previous program, and it was the contractor and the builder who didn't know the business and who would just pass the cost on to the actual decision maker and business owner anyway, so he didn't care. He just passes it on. So the dismissing of this current program is really the bottom line of what that presentation was about. And certainly anything that we do, there might be, in some areas there's a grain of truth, there might be some areas where somehow we can learn from that. So I don't want to dismiss the whole thing. But certainly we welcome that scrutiny, and here I'm not really refuting. I'm just putting the two conclusions side by side and let the evidence speak for itself.
So did the county ask the auditor? I'm trying to figure out what prompted the audit. So, Mr. McCauley, did the county go to the county auditor and say, we have a program, we would like you to review this and see, on an audit basis, can you help us assess whether this is doing what we intended? Is that how that audit came about?
There was no formal request by the board or by my office to perform this audit, but typical practice of our auditor is when new programs are instituted. For example, some years ago we had an energy conservation project, and the way we sold it to the board was that it was going to create energy, it was going to save energy, and it would pay for itself. Well, a year or so after we completed that project, the auditor sent a team in to look to see if we accomplished the objectives that we had intended to achieve. Mm-hmm. And similar motive here. New program, looks like it's going to cost the county some money and forfeited fees. A year or so after the program's put in place, let's take a look at it and see if it's achieving its objectives. Now,
well,
also, the board did make an oblique reference to potentially having the auditor come in and evaluate the program.
Let me respond to that as well. The commissioners did not ask for the audit. Greg Kimsey was a very vocal opponent to the program as we were going through the process of deliberating. He actually testified in public against the program.
In
May of 2013, when we were going through the process of considering it. And
what was his basis of
the same one as he's presenting here, that it would be unsustainable. It would be, even if the Clark County had a economic improvement, it would have happened on its own. Those assertions were made back then. And at this point, he felt like we've been there long enough that now he had a case to make to prove the fears back then, and that was the case he's making now. And so in response, I would love to be able to have, I don't know what the process is, for the auditor to present an audit, and then the commissioners have a response, and then whether the auditor would then have a, kind of an ongoing dialogue, a reiterative process, because I would love to be able to see the responses that we have addressed by the auditor, because that would help us to turn on the lights and say, what are we doing? Truth ought to speak for itself, and that'd be self-evident. And if somehow we're completely drawing opposite conclusions for the same data, I like to have that insight and say, how can you, please, I welcome that scrutiny. Help us understand how we can see the same data differently. Please, we welcome your response.
So I think that...
I'm concerned that before the program even got off the ground, he came to you and had a vested position.
In our public hearing, he testified
in
public.
That is concerning to me. But, I don't want to beat that horse. I don't want to go on.
I think maybe there's a thing where there's conflicting, there's plus and minus. One, is if you have an auditor, in one respect, auditors are always supposed to be unbiased. They're always supposed to be neutral. They're always supposed to be objective, not have a dog in the fight. And that's good. But on the other hand, if an auditor does have an opinion and he doesn't believe in something, he ought to have the freedom to speak up and make his case and campaign against it. And I welcome that because scrutiny is a good thing for us. Turn on the lights.
I'm not going to keep going this route because we're not going to convince each other that he's right or wrong. We respectfully disagree. And I think that not everything was considered. And for us to waste our time to go back and audit, it's not necessary. It's not needed. We're not going to remove the policy. It has proved financially beneficial. You can look at that by looking at our budget. And there's no need to waste our time and beat this thing to death. And that's what we're doing. And the auditor isn't always right. And I'm glad you brought up the other thing, Mark, because they were sure wrong there too, when their recommendation was to put the solar panels and everything, how profitable it would be. It performed better than they thought it did, but not nearly as efficient as electricity. So
but what this need to brings the circle around to. So what I was looking for was some background information. Because I have a copy of Kinsey's report. Okay. I will now have a copy of the PowerPoint. And I have the response, so I can look at all those objectively.
So what are we looking
the
for?
The question for me now is, what does it mean to the fee waiver program?
Well, that's where I think it is responsible, and it is a good investment of our time to always consider...
But does the board need to say... Do we need to come back and take some action? We think it's working. We'd like to try it for a little bit longer, or do we continue to have it implemented? What is our formal reaction to what we're doing to the report?
And that's a really good question. And this is certainly a very important ingredient of that. And we're not alone. I believe we should invite our budget office to weigh in on this as well, so that because this is important, and we don't want to just simply believe in something because we believe in it and just keep doing it. It's
exactly.
Really important.
Well, then I want a commitment from you. If you can't prove it's working by using all those people, that you'll remove it.
My point of the question.
There may be parts of it that are working. So
but the
I don't
point
think
of my question
go
is,
all or none.
If you continue to use our time and our effort and staff's time, and we have no intention of changing it, because in our minds we see that it's proven itself, and I believe it has. But if you want to disprove it, then you'll have to be agreeable to go along with the disproving or not be able to disprove it.
Well, before just simply set it aside, and I don't want to dismiss. I don't feel like it would be doing our due diligence just to dismiss an audit. I think it's important that we respond to it, and this is my response, and we can enhance that, and we can welcome the budget office to contribute as well, and Mark or whoever else that feels like they have relevant input to respond back to the auditor, and then invite the auditor to then come back and say, now that we have a ping and a pong here, help us understand now, what are we on the same page, or we just simply agree to disagree? So that is a healthy, the audit needs to stand up to scrutiny as well, and this allows that opportunity. So
we have an attorney waiting for us to make a motion. We have continued to debate the outcome of something that we're going to do in our own homework.
Well, let me just wrap this up.
In here?
Please do. We're having debates in something that we don't need to do.
What were you going to say, Chris?
Oh, no.
Okay. I would just, as a conclusion here, and you let me know if this is not a valid conclusion. Yeah, I'm flexible. Is that the path forward for us here is an invitation for each of us to take that document, amend it, and come back with the recommendations, invite the budget office, and then we can then take that document that's refined, submit it back to our auditor, and invite him to respond to that. Because maybe we'll find that we'll all be understanding the whole process and a way of evaluating it smarter, more accurate, better.
And I'm probably not going to go through all those steps, but after I may communicate with you and Tom what my observations are.
Sure.
You better not disagree with me.
I don't want to sign you up for work. If you're good with it, I'm perfectly
good. I don't need to go any farther. I don't expect him to agree with both of us. And we're not going to convince him to agree with us, David. You've got to realize that.
I'm not. My object is not to convince the auditor. My object is to welcome scrutiny.
We have some stuff that was discussed, and we have to make a motion in the general public.
Do you want me to make it on your behalf?
Please.
Mm-hmm. This was a request for our office, and maybe in conjunction with outside counsel, to investigate, and to the extent it's warranted, seek review of whether there was a violation of RCW 4230 and equitable relief to prevent any violations of the Open Public Meetings Act, and preserving the status quo during the course of the legal action for proceedings taken by the Composition Review Committee of CTRAN. And that was as a result of our executive session discussion.
That was a long
move. So moved?
Yeah.
So moved. Was. So moved.
Okay, we got it recorded there.
And it relates to
the vote for the vote of the Composition Review Committee to change the makeup of the CTRAN board.
And our issue is public notice.
Correct.
Let me paraphrase, or let me see if I can come up with a more concise statement of the problem in the path forward. The Composition Review Committee meeting of, 2 weeks ago at CTRAN did not provide the RCW specified 20 days notice in carrying out each of the steps specified in the special meetings. Public notice requirements. As a result, that same RCW, if it's found that public notice was not sufficiently provided, the outcome of that meeting would be null and void, and the county would still retain 3 seats on the CTRAN board. Nothing would change, and so the motion would be to...
That was the whole case.
That's the statement of the problem. So right now we're looking for to...
authorize our office and to either alone or with outside counsel to investigate and bring bring an action to seek review by declaratory relief and injunctive relief as needed to preserve the status quo and have a court review whether or not there was compliance with state law requirements.
Okay.
Both the bylaws, which require the 20-day notice, and then the
30-day notice.
The bylaws say what they are, but there are the timelines for the Open Public Meetings Act for special meetings.
Yes, and that's 20 days.
And that would be, well, in any case, and that will be, and we would ask the court to review that and make a finding as to whether or not there was a compliance with state law requirements.
Yes, and I'll turn that into a motion. We've got it recorded here. The idea is that the court would have to issue an injunction so that before the bylaws can be modified in the second Tuesday of January, that the status quo would be maintained to ensure that valid process is covered when it comes to meeting the state requirements for public notice.
My only hesitation with that is naming the date that we expect the bylaw change.
Okay.
It's not related just to that date or any date subsequent.
I agree. So whatever. In other words, sequence has to happen. You're going to have to follow a valid process with complying with the state-required public notice in order to have the actions of the review committee valid. And that has to, the injunction has to happen before the bylaws can be changed to match that.
The point is they broke the bylaw. So we're not trying the case. We're just making the motion.
Yes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, that works. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Got to follow process. It's our friend.
Thank you, Chris, for staying with us.
Yes,
appreciate
Chris.
It. Give it. Hey, leave the price up. You got to get a little bit of rest. Thank you.
It's like I was saying previously, it's a good thing the board time schedule was relatively light.
Commissioner Communication, do you have any?
Yes. Since we have a brand new commissioner who has experience already with WASAC, I would nominate our Commissioner Jeannie Stewart to be our new WASAC member for both the executive board in WASAC to represent Clark County.
Thank you. I'll be delighted to do that.
You didn't ask me if I wanted to relinquish my seat.
You have a seat?
It's not.
Did you want to be that person?
I'm already on the council. That's okay.
Are you the member?
This is a legislative liaison piece.
Yes.
Legislative liaison.
Yeah. Commissioner Stewart and Commissioner Fedora went at it for 25 minutes. You remember that, where it's like,
yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
He was begging.
Knocked down, drag out. They didn't offer it to me.
It was like 10 to 5.
And the next legislator didn't offer it back to me.
So as to be a member of the Legislative Steering Committee representing Clark County.
Thank you. And I acted in such a capacity at the Association of Washington Cities and the National League
Different
of Cities.
Association.
So I'll gladly accept the assignment.
Great.
They have two meetings, this November 20, then they have a December 6 in Chelan.
Great.
Well, we better make arrangements.
I'm not going.
Okay. Anything else?
I assure you, I'm not.
Do we need to vote on that, or is it just simply to accept?
We
have consensus.
No, we're good.
Is there anything else you want to surprise me with?
Let me see here.
Please say no.
It's been a reading of surprises.
I think I'm good here. Yeah, I'm good.
Do you have anything for the good of the order? Anything you want to bring up?
No.
You're building a list, though.
No,
I know.
No. Mary?
You are correct.
Nobody said I'm Mr. Administrator, almost a manager?
Nothing, sir. Nothing.
I have nothing either. We are adjourned.
Okay. Okay.